Friends and foes, you diesel-powered disciples of cool, welcome back to Tales from the Flipside on the Diesel Punk Podcast. I am your host, the artist sometimes known as Big Daddy Cool, the comic book loving, time traveling, diesel punk prophet of pop culture, the impossibilist, the bamboozlist. I am John Pica. You can call me Johnny. And on this episode, we are going to talk about two films that came out recently in the last 6 months that you might not realize are diesel punk movies. And before we do that, we want to talk about our sponsors real quick. Go check out Magic Subscription Box at magicsubscriptionbox.com. I'm a professional magician, three-time champion, two-time Houdini Award winner, and I love Magic Subscription Box. They deliver a magic shop to your mailbox every month, and it's usually $50 to $60 worth of magic for $25, $30 after shipping, and it's quality. As a professional magician, every month I find something that I can use in my professional repertoire every week when I'm performing at the House of Cards in Nashville, or in a theater, or at a civic event, or other show that I've been booked at. Check them out, magicsubscriptionbox.com. Use my promo code, BDCMagic, and take 50% off your first month. And you too can be like our diesel punk superhero idol, Harry Houdini. That's magicsubscriptionbox.com, promo code BDCMagic, and take 50% off your first month. All right, so we're going to talk some diesel punk movies that you didn't know were diesel punk. Now, in a previous episode, I reviewed Mortal Engines and Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is hands down diesel punk all the way. It has the aesthetics of the era, the zeitgeist of the era, what we call decadence. It has science fiction and fantasy in the character of Mary Poppins and the lamplighters, you know, the magic. It doesn't have to be technology. It can be anything that turns history on its side. You know, alt history, magic tech, future tech, alternative tech, the occult, whatever, you know, transforms it from history to alt history. So it's got to have science fiction, fantasy, and it's got to have punk. And in this case, you know, what we consider punk is, you know, counterculturalism, you know, standing against or fighting against the status quo. And in Mary Poppins, it has that. The Mary Poppins Returns, you've got, you know, the Banks and the Banks kids and Mary Poppins and the lamplighters all fighting against this monolithic bank who basically controls the status quo. So you've got this push against culture, this push against the status quo. So I reviewed that. You can go back and listen to the full review. I love that movie. It's maybe my favorite movie of 2018. I also reviewed Mortal Engines. And this is on the episode with, it's called Four from 30,000 Feet. So you can go back and listen. Mortal Engines is not strictly a diesel punk movie, but it has a lot of diesel punk influence and a lot for diesel punks to love. It is definitely not the quintessential steampunk movie as so many fans were hoping it would be. But go back and listen to that review, and you can hear Eric and I talk about that on another previous episode as well. You enjoy that. Let us know what you think. But that is not what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about two other films that actually came out earlier in 2018, and for whatever reason, they slipped by me. I didn't see them in the theater. One of them I wanted to see, but just never made it out to the theater. The other one, I didn't even know existed until it hit Redbox. And we'll start with that. Excuse me while I take a quick drink. You may notice my voice is a little bit lower and deeper, more appropriate for radio. Struggling, excuse me, struggling with a little bit of a cold, but we'll get through it. So, the first movie came out, it came out in September, and I totally missed it. It went right by me, and I didn't know it had even come out until I saw it at Redbox. And that is the movie, The House with a Clock in Its Walls. First of all, when I first saw this movie, and then I saw it at Redbox, and then maybe a few days later, I saw it on a list of the worst geek movies of 2018. And let's face it, 2018 was filled with awesome geekness. You had Rampage, Pacific Rim Uprising, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther, we had Jumanji, we had Fantastic Beasts 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald, we had Mary Poppins Returns, Mortal Engines, Aquaman, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it just was a phenomenal year for geek movies. Strangely enough, three of those other movies made the list of the worst geek movies or fandom movies of 2018. Pacific Rim Uprising made that list, and so did Crimes of Grindelwald. Not sure why. I really enjoyed those. They're not in my top five of the year, but I did enjoy them. And by the way, as an aside, I have not compiled my top five favorite movies of 2018. I've been very torn, very on the fence, because there was a lot of good stuff. And so I'm going back and Solo, we had Solo, a Star Wars story this year. I mean, it was an amazing year. So there's a lot to choose from, and I'm still going back and rewatching. I didn't get to see Red Sparrow yet. That's on my list before I make my decision. And I kind of want to see Peppermint. It got panned by critics, but I'm really a pretty good judge of movies based on the trailers. And this one, I really want to see. So once I see those two movies, those two and Welcome to Marwen, I'll be able to make my choices for the top five of 2018. I would assume that that will be completed sometime this week. Anyway, The House with a Clock in Its Walls. It is a movie based on the novel. And the overview is, a 10-year-old Lewis goes to live with his oddball uncle in a creaky old house that contains a mysterious tick-tock noise. He soon learns that his Uncle Jonathan and his feisty neighbor, Mrs. Zimmerman, are powerful practitioners of the magic arts. When Lewis accidentally awakens the dead, the town's sleepy facade suddenly springs to life, revealing a secret and dangerous world of witches, warlocks, and deadly curses. This movie is set, I want to say that this movie was set after World War II. And it stars Cate Blanchett, Jack Black, Kyle MacLachlan, and a few others here. Eli Roth. Who did Eli Roth play? Let's see, Eli Roth. And who is Eli Roth? He looks familiar. I don't remember him in this movie. That's very odd. Anyway, Cate Blanchett and Jack Black. Cate Blanchett plays Mrs. Zimmerman. Jack Black plays Jonathan. The full name is Uncle Jonathan. It'll come to me later. Anyway, I gotta say, I've never been a big fan of Jack Black. I think his comedies tend to be silly and forced, and I really don't enjoy them. I did like his performance in Jumanji. for whatever reason, that came very naturally to him, and it was authentically funny. I really loved him in Peter Jackson's King Kong, one of my favorite diesel punk films. And he was playing a serious role there. And generally, when Jack Black plays a serious role and doesn't try to be funny, that's when he's really at his best. Now, he plays an oddball character in this, but he's not doing that slapstick comedy kind of stuff. He's just an eccentric character. So, and the character's not written to be funny. It's written to be, you know, a serious drama, action, adventure. And so it has a lot going for it. It was really quite enjoyable. Kyle MacLachlan plays the villain who has gone off to war. He was a warlock, a wizard, and Jonathan and Isaac Izzard, played by Kyle MacLachlan, were a magic duo. And Kyle goes off to war, or Isaac goes off to war, rather, comes back changed because he's been confronted, met with a demon, Asmodel. Some of you may know that name. It's used throughout mythology. And Asmodel gives him heightened magical powers, heightened wizard powers, and gives him a vision that he needs to basically end humanity by turning time backwards and reversing time and reverting to the dawn of mankind. And only he and his wife, Selena, are going to survive and make it through this spell. They're going to live on in the dawn of history. So Jonathan, Mrs. Zimmerman, and the boy Lewis have to figure out how to stop him. Lots of fun. Really fast-paced. Anyone who has ever been branded as a weirdo or a spaz or, you know, had separation anxiety problems is going to relate to Lewis. I really related to Jack Black's character, Jonathan. I really felt a kinship with him, but it was Cate Blanchett who, be still my heart, I fell in love with all over again. She is my new celebrity crush. I liked her a lot in Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. I loved her even more in Ocean's 8, which came out in 2018, by the way. But this movie, I adored her. She was just perfect. And from this moment on, I will see any movie with Cate Blanchett. So I'm not going to spoil it. It's just a lot of fun. A lot of fun with magical creatures and spells and hidden rooms and beautiful Art Deco architecture and clothing and vehicles and sets. And it's a perfect representation of the post-war diesel era. So it's got the aesthetics. It's got the style and aesthetics of the diesel era. So tick one. And it's got, it's definitely got science fiction, fantasy in the wizardry realm. This could easily be a crossover movie with Fantastic Beasts. This could easily fit into the Harry Potter universe during that era. And Cate Blanchett's outfits are to die for, by the way. But so it's got the aesthetics, it's got the style, it's got the fantasy and science fiction, but does it have the punk? So I had to think about this for a minute, and you know, I think that anytime you have a small band of heroes who are fighting against all-powerful, cataclysmic-level evil. Then you've kind of got that punk. You've got the push against, the fight against authority. And that's a big part of what punk is. Not just a fight against the status quo and popular or not just countercultural, but a fight against tyranny, totalitarianism, authority. And you've definitely got that in the characters of Lewis, Jonathan, and Mrs. Zimmerman. So I'm going to go ahead and give this one a thumbs up as a diesel punk movie. I think you should go see it and enjoy it. It's definitely what I would refer to as Pikesian diesel punk. This is my own version of diesel punk. You've got Pycraftian, which is the dark dystopian, more along the lines of Mortal Engines. Then you've got the hopeful Autizian diesel punk, which is more along the lines of Sky Captain, Rocketeer, Captain America. And then you have what I call Pycassian diesel punk, which is that deco punk styling, that bright hopeful, bright colors, very hopeful, very comic book style. You know, Dick Tracy, Mary Poppins Returns, A House with the Clock in Its Walls, Fantastic Beasts, those movies that are brighter and shinier and have a much more colorful, hopeful spirit and style. Chicago is even one of those. Even though it's a dark subject, the dance numbers, the fantasy pieces inside Roxy Hart's head are very much in line with this style of diesel punk. So I hope that phrase turn, you know, kind of catches on. I would love to for people to quote me 20 years from now as creating a flavor of diesel punk, the Pycassian diesel punk. Anyway, so The House with a Clock in Its Walls, I'll give it 2 diesel punk thumbs up. Now, the next film that kind of took me by surprise. So it's easy to see how The House with a Clock in Its Walls is definitely diesel punk. You can kind of see where I'm going with that. Even just by watching the trailers and seeing the stills, you get it. The other movie that may not be as obvious, a little bit more subtle, but once you break down the individual elements, I think you'll really see it. And in the countercultural aspect, the push against, you know, the status quo authoritarianism, I think it's even more punk than some of the other punk movies that we've seen in recent years. I'm talking about Disney's Christopher Robin, starring Ewan McGregor, Halle Atwell, woohoo! Get to see her again. Jim Cummings, the voice of Winnie the Pooh. Brad Garrett as Eeyore. You had Peter Capaldi, Toby Jones, Nick Mohammed, and Bronte Carmichael as Madeline Robin. So, if you haven't seen this movie, I want to encourage you to go see it. This is a movie that will really pull at your heartstrings in a big, big way. I think it really speaks to the overall human experience in a very powerful way, especially anyone over the age of 30. Now, the movie was kind of marketed as a family movie, and it is definitely appropriate for families. But it was marketed a little bit more towards the younger family audience, almost as a kids movie. And this is definitely not a kids movie. It's a movie that kids can enjoy, but the subject matter is very much speaking to adults and grown-ups. And I think there's a lot of the movie that's just going to be over kids' heads and will be very boring. Now, the last 30 minutes, absolutely, kids will go wild over. Leading up to that, I just don't know. Use your judgment. I think they'll just be bored. There's nothing inappropriate. I just think a lot of kids will be bored. The story goes, Christopher Robin gets sent off to boarding school. He leaves Pooh and Tigger and Piglet and Owl and the whole gang at the Hundred Acre Woods. And if you're like me, you've always assumed that they were imaginary figments of his imagination, and kind of a manifestation of his own personality, aspects of Christopher Robin's own personal personalities. And so he leaves them behind. He goes off to boarding school. He grows up. He goes to college, gets, you know, learns to become an accountant. He goes off to war. He gets married. He comes back from the war. He's got a child, a 2-year-old daughter, 3-year-old daughter, something like that. And he's left the Hundred Acre Wood behind. He's now basically a puppet of a corporation. This is in the late 40s, maybe the early 50s. And he's faced with a choice. He's been forced to choose between his family and his job. And if this sounds familiar, it is a familiar story. Very much like the movie Hook. Robin Williams plays Peter Pan, grown up and forgotten about who he is. But that's where the comparisons really stop. Throughout the movie, we see glimpses of Pooh Bear and the other characters of the Hundred Acre Woods waiting for Christopher Robin to return. And as Christopher Robin's growing older, Pooh Bear is sitting at the door, the doorway that Christopher Robin used to come through. It's a door in a tree in the Hundred Acre Wood. And without giving too much away, without being too spoilery, that door is actually a portal. And what we learn is that the Winnie the Pooh characters, the characters of the Hundred Acre Wood, are real. They are not figments of Christopher Robin's imagination. Pooh Bear decides something stirs in him that tells him that Christopher Robin needs him. And so he comes through the portal to London and finds Christopher Robin. And you know, at first, you know, the story is about Christopher Robin getting Pooh back to the Hundred Acre Wood and the adventures that he goes on when he returns, when he goes back through the portal, finding the other characters who have been scared away, and then eventually remembering who he is and what his relationship was, and, you know, recapturing that youth, that childlike spirit. And then, after that happens, you know, Piglet and Tigger and Eeyore going through the portal to help Christopher Robin keep his job, because they've realized that they've maybe jeopardized his job by switching out his important papers with memories from the Hundred Acre Wood. And so they go through the portal, and that last 30 minutes is them and their fast adventures around London. Very fun, very funny, great characterizations. You know, Jim Cummings has been doing the voice of Winnie the Pooh for at least 20 years or more, maybe longer than that, and he's perfect. Brad Garrett is Eeyore. Toby Jones was Owl, Nick Mohammed was Piglet, and he was perfect. The whole cast was great, and, you know, there's not a whole lot that I can say other than that, You know, it really touched my heartstrings. It really spoke to me as, you know, an adult. And it stressed the importance of maintaining that youthful spirit, never letting go of your childhood, and choosing the right priorities. And in this case, the right priority is Christopher Robin's family, not the corporation. And through understanding where his priorities are, he's able to actually provide the company with the right solution in the end. Just a fantastic movie. I highly recommend it. Ewan McGregor was great. Hallie Atwell was great. The cast was just perfect. It was just a perfect cast. And I have nothing but praise for this movie, other than, you know, young kids will be a little bit bored with it. But what makes it Diesel Punk? Well, we've already talked about a couple of the tenets of Diesel Punk. It has to have the style and aesthetics, the decadence, and this movie definitely has. It's a period setting after World War II, late 40s, maybe early 50s. It definitely has the science fiction and fantasy, because it's got a portal to another world. You've got sentient stuffed animals. They're not anamorphic animals. They're toys. They are sentient toys. Well, I take that back, except for Rabbit and Owl. Rabbit and Owl, in this version of Winnie the Pooh, they were anamorphic animals who could speak. So you've got both. You got both. And as I mentioned before, like House with the Clock in Its Walls, like Mary Poppins Returns, like Mortal Engines, like so many other Diesel Punk movies, there is this rejection, this rebellion against the status quo, against society, against authoritarianism and totalitarianism. Basically, Christopher Robin, Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, Tigger, his daughter Madeline, and his wife, they become, you know, the small band of rebels pushing back against the authority of this giant monolithic corporation. And so you get that celebration of rebellion. And, maybe, the more I think about it, the more I think maybe the punk in Diesel Punk is just rebellion, period. Some kind of rebellion. That's worth examining more, and that's worth talking to Eric Fisk and Larry Amiet about even more. You know, we always talk about how it's, you know, the push, the rebellion against, you know, the status quo, or, you know, the anti-hero, but maybe it's just rebellion, period. Rebellion of some sort. That's worth thinking about. I'd like to get your thoughts. But those are two movies that you maybe did not realize were Diesel Punk movies. Christopher Robin was promoted heavily. It did really well at the box office. House with the Clock in Its Walls, not so much. So you probably didn't even hear about it, much less seen it. Go out, get it on Redbox. Both movies are on Redbox right now. That's where I rented them to watch them. Very surprised, super delighted with both. And I think you'll really, really enjoy them, especially if you're into the lighter elements, the lighter styles of Diesel Punk. I would put Christopher Robin definitely in that Autizian Diesel Punk category. Maybe it is Picassian, because it's more fanciful fantasy. There's something else to think about. I'm going to be thinking a lot about how we define Diesel Punk. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who say, well, Johnny, why would you be the person to define it? I'm not really. I mean, I'm not the authority, as it were. But I am the one with the podcast. I am the voice of Diesel Punk. So there's that. Anyway, I'm only being half serious. Not really. I'm totally serious. Nah, I'm just joking. Anyway, so those are two movies I highly recommend. Go check them out, especially if you're into the lighter, more fun Diesel Punk. You're going to really enjoy those. So, you know, in 2018, we got quite a few movies with a lot of Diesel Punk overtones and textures to it. Even starting with Jumanji. If you look at the characters, it has the style and aesthetic of that era, that pulp adventure style. Pacific Rim, Overlord, a lot of diesel punk, retro future diesel punk elements in that. It's not a movie I would call diesel punk, but there's a lot for diesel punks to like. We had Solo, A Star Wars Story, just filled with diesel punk style and references and aesthetics. Tons in there. And again, not a movie I would hand to someone and say, this is diesel punk, but just like I maintain that all of Star Wars is good diesel punk. We had Fantastic Beasts 2, Crimes of Grindelwald. We had Mortal Engines. We had Mary Poppins Returns. We had House with the Clock in Its Walls. We had Christopher Robin. And there's probably some movies that I've seen that I'm actually totally forgetting about. But those are the ones that are off the top of my head that we had in 2018 alone. Great time. Great time to love diesel punk aesthetics in Hollywood. Well, guys and gals, that is it for my episode, this episode this week. My views and reviews of these two films, Christopher Robin and The House with a Clock in Its Walls. I'd love to know what you thought about them, if you saw them, what you think about my assertions about the movies. Do you agree or disagree? I'd love to hear from you. You can drop me a line at johnpica@johnpica.com or post a note on our Facebook pages, Diesel Punk Podcast or John Pica Shows. Easy to find. And you can listen to more episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and now Spotify. So check that out. And in the meantime, if you like the podcast, make sure you tell 200 or 300 of your closest friends and family to come join the fun. And until the next time, we'll catch you on the flip side.